Thank you all for coming to our panel, where we're going to do fantastic things like rigorously analyze humor. I'm just kidding. Yes. It says kidding. I'm totally the comedian. I'm not the comedian on this panel. So, yes, thank you all for coming. What we're actually going to talk about today are a couple of things. We're going to focus on our conversation on the ways that humor can be used as a tool in the fight for the issues that we care about. And we're going to talk a lot about media in particular. I feel like I need this microphone to go up, so be patient with me. So we're going to talk about how we can use humor to fight for media that is better than the media that we have, how we can use media as a tool to fight for other issues that we care about, and why the policies that impact media are so important in all of this work. And I'm just going to give you guys a little bit of context and try not to bore you too much, and then the comedians will talk and they'll entertain you more than I will. It kind of goes without saying, but sometimes it's worth pointing it out and thinking, just taking a moment to pause and think about this. Media are a powerful thing. You know, it's a hugely powerful institution. We're constantly surrounded by it. We have our iPhones, the internet, television, magazines, radio. All of these things impact our society and our culture, the way that we view ourselves and each other and the world around us. And I think we actually had a very recent example of this with, are you guys familiar with the Kony 2012 campaign? So, I mean, this was, I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I'll just let it run a little bit in the background. I mean, this was a really incredible example, regardless of how you feel about the campaign, and there's certainly a lot to unpack there. It's undeniable that the video had a huge impact, and it was because of this use of media, storytelling, narrative, images, and sounds, that, you know, this issue that basically hadn't had any sort of widespread attention was suddenly on the front page of the New York Times. And I think it's worth noting that the filmmaker who made this said that he wanted the group to be like the Pixar of human rights stories. So in case it's not immediately obvious what I'm talking about when I'm talking about media that aren't great, do people remember this ad from the Super Bowl? I won't play the whole thing, but I will get it running a little bit. Did folks see this? Okay. So, I mean, we can take a moment to really thank this company for removing all the difficulty of reading into the subtext, because it's pretty straightforward. The woman turns into a car. So they really took it to the next level there. Then we have, you know, the news media itself, local news, basically just being a couple of minutes of airtime devoted to weather and man-on-the-street stories about wearing flip-flops. And then the cable news networks don't really do that great a job either. And then we have things like The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, who in many ways are better at communicating the news and information about what's happening, especially with regard to politics, than the news media. If you look at what Stephen Colbert has done with his super PAC, I think that most people have learned more about what political action committees are, how they work in the post-Citizens United world from what he's done on his show than they have from, say, watching CNN or the local news. So the three of us here, I mean, we all care very deeply about the ways in which the world is messed up, and we're all figuring out ways to make it better, and we come at this from different places. But ultimately, you know, we know that media are a tool for shaping opinions and our understanding of the world, and also a way to connect to new ideas and to each other. And comedy, like media, has the power to convey messages in a way that little else can. So I've done all this rambling without introducing myself. My name is Candace. I'm not a comedian. I work for a nonprofit organization called Free Press. And what we do is work to organize people that are mad about the media work with them to do something about changing it. So mostly we focus on that through policy changes in Washington, in Congress, and at the FCC, because we've seen that the decisions these bodies make have a massive impact on the kind of media options that are available to us. And you may not realize this, but they really call the shots on some pretty important issues related to the media, from who gets to own media outlets to the freedom for you to do what you want on the internet and with your cell phone. In many ways, this is kind of a classic battle of corporations versus the people. So here we have this massively influential institution that could be used for the forces of good. Here's my example of the forces of good with shameless self-promotion in there. So, you know, doing things like supporting independent artists, talking about activism or politics, local events, maybe some smart, positive representations of women. But instead, it's used to do stuff like this. Did it go away?
Lost signal.
Oh, no. Come back.
Guys, technology is fickle, and you can't always count on it. And so, right, I'm supposed to be talking while we fix this.
This is some good vamping.
Yeah. Oh, thanks. It's just me waxing philosophical about what exactly is happening right now.
It's so close. You guys are missing my really awesome picture of Twitter. Anyway, I'll just keep moving on. Instead of, you know, media that do great things, we have media that do bad things. CNN is basically the great photo that I had there was, if it weren't for CNN, I wouldn't know what's happening on Twitter. So, you know, if the companies had it their way, they would buy up or push out all of the competition, which would free them up to do things like price gouging. Ooh, like, well, there's the background of my computer, but not actually what I'm looking at. Hold on. Everybody loves... Yeah, I don't know what's going on. Wait. Yeah. Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Yay, picture. Okay. So, if the companies had it their way, they would do things like buy up all of the competition or push them out, which frees them up to do price gouging, using Twitter instead of paying for investigative journalism, and canceling all media content that costs money to produce, and really just focusing on cheap things like reality shows. And they really have the money to back up this stuff in Washington, though the figures in this are a couple years old, I can assure you that it's only gotten worse. You know, and there's an old saying that, you know, he who controls the media controls the message. And, it's he because, you know, women comprise 51% of the population and own just 6% of broadcast stations. And the statistics aren't much better for people of color and minorities. So there's a lot of problems with our media system. And, you know, the personal can be political, as they say. So while I spend all my time focusing on media policy and wonkery by day. I play in rock bands at night. And when I was a freshman in high school, they passed the 96 Telecommunications Act. And, you know, for me, this policy is a great example of how decisions that are made in Washington can really overnight have this massive impact on the cultural landscape. So before the act was passed, the maximum amount of radio stations that you could own as a broadcaster was 40. And right after it was passed, Clear Channel went out and bought up 1,200 radio stations nearly overnight across the country. I'm just giving up on the computer for a moment. So long to the days where local radio sounds different in different cities, it's a lot cheaper to just have a computer running a playlist in a closet. Now, I've been focused mostly here on talking about content, but that's only really part of the story. We're also going to talk a lot about not just the content that you can consume, but also the content that you can produce and how that can be distributed. And, you know, it's barely worth saying anymore that technology has changed everything, but I think it's worth remembering that really the internet has enabled a lot of this. It's been this great democratizing medium of our generation. I can't think of a tool more powerful or more important for us to protect, and I think Eddie will talk a little bit about that as well. My ability to do everything that I do in life, from having delusions of grandeur about playing music to working on media policy, is all possible because of the internet and what we can do there. You know, instead of relying on gatekeepers, we're free to distribute our own work and connect with each other, and we can all act like we're the most amazing famous people ever on the internet. So I'm going to stop there and introduce you guys to my co-panelists, and then they're going to talk a little bit more about these issues, and we're going to try and fix the technology problem so that we can watch funny videos and stuff. But here we have Erin Gibson. Erin is a master of media critique. Her specialty is on the ways that the media portray women. So she's done pieces that focus on everything from the contraception debates to the best reality television show that I know about involving plastic surgery and weddings.
Bridal plasty.
Yeah. And then we're also going to hear from Eddie Geller, who is a comedian turned doer with basically what was one post on Reddit saying that you wanted to start a political action committee.
Yep.
So, you know, these two are great. They get it. They understand that, you know, pointing out the problem only gets us half of the way there. And if we really want to make changes, we have to work for solutions. But we can use comedy and we can use media as a tool for achieving that. And the solutions are key. Like, we don't just want to complain about these issues. We want to use comedy and humor as a way to point out the problem and push people towards working for change. So I'll let them talk a little bit more about themselves while I try and fix this technological thing, and then we
Perfect.
Can deal with it there.
Okay. Hi, I'm Erin Gibson. I used to host a segment on Current TV called Modern Lady. It was a feminist look at what is happening in the media and how the media talks to people or talks to women and portrays women. Oh, I have a thing where I have ADD and I can't talk when I hear other talking. Anyway, I wasn't very politically active before I got this job. I did alternative comedy at UCB Theater in LA, and you know, superficially involved in what's happening with the birth control debate and abortions and stuff that really directly impacted my life and keeping babies out of it. Anyway, having this job and having to consume so much media and looking at the patterns by which the media talks to women and advertises women was simultaneously frightening and wonderful. So do you want to show a piece? Okay, so this one is, do you guys know Gisele Bündchen? She's the hottest woman on the planet? Yeah, okay. She did an interview with I think it was UK, some UK fancy lady magazine, and said that everyone should have to breastfeed, which, whatever, she's a model. But it was funny to me to see the brouhaha that happened after she got sexy in here, after she made this statement. So this is a video that I made about that. I don't like you to hear jokes. I think it's bad. And I think that this is really up for your interpretation, what I'm saying.
Being a supermodel, only open your mouth to look pouty.
Lady.
Last week, supermodel Gisele Bündchen forgot the cardinal rule of being a supermodel. Only open your mouth to look pouty. But never, ever let your words out.
Gisele Bündchen is responding to backlash over what she told a magazine about breastfeeding. She now wants a law
that would force all moms to breastfeed their babies
for 6 months.
I mean, every time you bring it up here in the office, everyone starts screaming.
Oh, did you guys hear what Gisele said?
It wasn't just women in my office who were getting their panties in a Bündchen. See what I did there? It was women across the universe acting like boobs. Oh, I did it again.
No. You can't. I also think that when you can hear jokes, you shouldn't be able to see what's happening. Because again, it's like it's art, and
you don't want to make it too easy.
No, you guys, we really want you to work for this. Literally, you can't see, but this computer is having an epileptic.
It's like having a seizure.
It's like going crazy. There's a loose cable. That's my. I'm an IT person. I think there's a loose cable. Anyway, I'll talk a little bit about the video and just like I don't know if I'm part of the problem by even discussing it more, but like, why you saw the first part, like every major news outlet was covering this. Who cares? Who gives a shit why this woman said it? Who cares? It's not a big deal, but instantly it was like a huge issue. And I guess because it's breastfeeding, I don't know. I guess, is breastfeeding a big deal?
I mean, I feel like people should do it if they can.
If
sure.
you can.
Yeah.
If you have boobs and you produce milk, you should do what you want with it.
I mean, I feel like I'm not necessarily an expert on the subject of breastfeeding.
But you are a boob expert, is that correct?
a boob spurt, yes.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, they waste their time on bullshit that, you know, celebrity plus something controversial means, you know.
Right. My justification for all the pieces that I do, especially when it's something like this where it's like I'm making a comment on how much other people are making a comment on stuff, I always justify it by saying, like, well, you know, I'm the person who's there. I'm self-deprecating what I do with my life right now. But I'm the person who wants to show you how ridiculous it is that we're talking about this and try to dismantle it. I think that's one of the main, rules of comedy.
Is, yeah. If
you can be hypercritical of everything, you'll probably have a really good career.
Well, and I think this is like, you know, what people love so much about The Daily Show and Colbert. And it's like, you know, I see, like, what you do is, like, expanding that sphere. Like, they're not necessarily, you know, focused on women's issues. And so it's, you know, having more people to focus on certain things like that, you know, I think is where you come in.
Yeah, I mean, generally you do have to have a sense of outrage, but with anything that's political or heated, my rule is always get angry, get real angry, get real mad in the face, and then calm down. And then rationally figure out what's a good way to dismantle it where I don't come off as an angry jerk.
Yeah, no, and I do the same thing. Like, you know, what makes me angry in general, and then finding out, you know, what specifically is so upsetting, and then making comedy from there. I'm so sorry about all this tech stuff. I feel like you guys deserve...
I feel like this is an interactive... I mean, I'm sorry to be... I'm sorry, guys. I have to say something about it because it's an interactive festival. And... Okay. Well, the internet's working properly.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so we don't... Do we need to see the whole thing? We could probably start from the news thing. Yeah. Okay.
The backlash over what she told a magazine about breastfeeding.
She now wants a law that would force all moms to breastfeed their babies for 6 months.
I mean, every time you bring it up here in the office, everyone starts screaming.
Oh, did you guys hear what Giselle said?
But it wasn't just women in my office who were getting their panties in a bunch. See what I did there? It was women across the universe acting like boobs. Oh, I did it again.
Yo! Giselle! Not everybody is meant to breastfeed, my dear.
Giselle Bundchen, give me advice on cellulite. Give me advice on how to keep my teeth white. But shut up when it comes to decisions that I need to make on how to best raise my child.
Bottom line, mind your own business, Giselle.
You know, with all due respect to the beautiful Giselle, shut up and model.
Well, listen, you can't have all those looks and a brain.
Why not, Kimberly Guilfoyle? Here's sexy lawyer you, and here's sexy model you. Kimmy, 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 Kim. You got a sexy law degree? Explain to us in a rational way why ladies be getting irrational.
Here's the problem. It's just not practical. You don't know everybody's situation. You can't breastfeed premature babies. So for her to make a blanket statement and suggest what? Legal punishment, jail time, lock up moms and put them in silver bracelets?
They use plastic ties now. Less conspicuous, but they do chafe. I doubt Giselle was seriously advocating locking up moms who want to put their boobs on lockdown. It's hyperbole. You know how Fox contributors talk.
But a lot of things that we're talking about today really is the progressives' assault on our liberty. You're going to enforce a law for mothers to breastfeed. That is for the parents to decide and the doctor. The government should butt out.
Is she talking about the U.S. government or the People's Republic of Gizellistan? Who would even want to live there? Oh, I know. Only every man in the world. They'd have Giselle. And then they wouldn't have to listen to all this. Ladies, 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 cool your jets. Let me give you a little remedial civics lesson. If a supermodel opens her gap and says something dumb in a British magazine, that's not how a bill becomes a law. And FYI, you shouldn't be taking breastfeeding advice from Giselle, who, as far as I know, is not a certified lactation specialist. I only take breastfeeding advice from a Tibetan ex-junkie holistic spiritual healer named Feather. So, Giselle, do us all a favor and get back to doing what you do best. Looking good in your devil Santa fairy mink lingerie. And the rest of you ladies, chillax and get back to business. I don't know what business, but just get back to it.
P
P.S. Modern Lady thinks mandatory breastfeeding is a good idea. Modern Lady doesn't care about babies. She just likes making people feel uncomfortable in restaurants.
Thank you, Aaron. As always, you were on the...
Anyway, that was, that video, finally. I don't have anything else to say about it. Should we show another one? I think we should show the White House report on women. So, this is a depressing report. Kind of my job on this show was to cover, because there's nobody doing this kind of thing. I mean, Christian Schaal to a degree on The Daily Show. I had a lot of freedom to cover not just how the media looks at women, but how women's issues are covered. And this is about how the White House report on women, and a little bit more about how depressing the figures are and how they were commented on. And I wish that the media, it's such a hard and nuanced thing. Like, I don't want to sit and listen to 3.5 hours of Gisele Bündchen and people taking her very seriously. But I also don't, I would like for people to be honest. If they're going to spew their opinion, I wish there was just a little more honesty about it and nuance and not just plain irrational statements about stuff. So this is, forgive me, guys, I haven't seen this in a while. The show got canceled, so I don't work there anymore. We can't see.
Oh, you're on it.
Figured it out.
Thanks.
Women's History Month, and the government has a real special gift just for us ladies. A 97-page report!
The White House is releasing a comprehensive report on the status of American women. It's the first in more than 40 years.
Why so long? Because progress this slow is too depressing to report on every year, or even every decade.
They work hard for the money, but women still are not getting paid as much as men.
They do work hard for their money. They're also maniacs, maniacs, because they're so poor. And they're dancing, but they're only dancing in their apartment because they can't afford to go to a club. That's right, ladies. In 1979, we were paid 62 cents for every dollar a man makes. And in 2011, we make 80 cents for every dollar a man makes. That's a whole 18 cents more in only 32 years, which is a little more than half a penny a year. At this rate, we'll be paid equally on September 17th, 2046. Have fun trying to sleep on those stats, if you have time to sleep, ladies, because you have tons of housework.
The report also found working women do about 3 hours more housework every week than their husbands.
It's because guys aren't good at multitasking. I could do 5 loads of laundry while poning noobs on Halo. Pew, 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 pew. Is that right? So why in 2011 are things so uneven? Dan Abrams, author of Man Down, a book all about how ladies are better than men, explains why we're not better at getting equal pay.
Why then are women lagging when it comes to money? If I'm claiming in this book that they're so much better in all these areas, and I think part of the answer is that the society hasn't caught up with the research.
Society hasn't caught up with the research that I assume was based on society. This guy speaks in M.C. Escher drawings. Dan also wants us to know when asked to do the impossible, women always come out ahead.
Men are better athletes, but it's one of the only areas, the book shows, where women can actually beat men in the ultra marathons, meaning 135 miles or 300 miles without sleeping.
300-mile ultra marathon? That's a thing I'm good at? That's a thing that people do? Ever? On the bright side, the White House report on women does have some good news for us.
It's that it used to be in recessions, generally, unemployment rates were higher among women. Mm-hmm. Now, in more recent recessions, we've seen unemployment rates higher among men.
Well, I don't mind buying drinks for my unemployed dates, as long as it's during happy hour, because society got me on a budget.
You can check out
I think
more
it's best to end videos
Thursday.
With funny faces, just to be like... That, I'm sorry. I started hating myself when I was watching that. just
Only
everything
then?
I've done wrong. I'm just watching it, going, "Oh, that was a bad move. Yep, that was a." And this is why I do this with my life, you guys. People pay me money. So the show ended, and my writing partner, Brian Safi, who does a gay version of the ladies thing that I do, we started a podcast called Throwing Shade, where we could continue to look at the issues that happen every week and try to inject some sort of humor into it and lightness, which is sometimes hard to do when you're talking about Iraqi policewoman being raped and stuff like that. But I think it's important to talk about that heavy stuff and try to handle it with some sort of... I'm not going to use the word class because I don't have any, but, you know, some sort of...
Panache,
yeah. But, and also, for me, it's given me a sense of empowerment that, I watched the news, like, yes, that thing exists. I don't have to listen to it, and I have options when it comes to how I decide to consume what's happening in the world. That's it. Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, as we muddle through our technical difficulties, Eddie.
Yes.
You're up. Tell us about you.
Okay.
And then we're going to try and watch some videos with sound and pictures moving at the same time.
Lovely.
From a computer.
So I used to live in Los Angeles. Now I live in New York, but I moved to Los Angeles to do comedy and acting. I'd done a lot of comedy since the end of high school, and had always had cared passionately about, you know, whatever issues, but hadn't really been much of an activist. And then one night back in Los Angeles, there was an article about net neutrality. Does anyone here know net neutrality? All right, great. All right, so it's pretty much net neutrality means you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want on the internet, and it's this principle that has kept the internet what it is since it began. And it's this thing that's been fought over since the mid-2000s because pretty much, you know, a lot of these telecom companies would like to slice and dice the internet, turn it into cable TV. Okay, so there's this article about net neutrality, and I post it to Reddit.com, and it was this article about how after the GOP had taken over Congress, that the prospects for net neutrality legislation, for enshrining net neutrality, were doomed. And so I said, fuck this idea that we can't get anything done. Let's start a Reddit political action committee. And so I thought it was, very clever, but I didn't think anything was actually going to happen. But then the next day, a lot of people saw it, and I guess I was like, okay, let's do this. So anyway, so... that's how I really sort of fell into activism, is starting this organization. And it was funny because when I started this organization, I thought, okay, I can't be funny anymore. I have to be serious. People have to take me seriously. No more joking around. And this is actually how I got into contact with the wonderful people at Free Press. And because when I was starting my organization, they were like, oh, work with us to help us push for net neutrality. And so I did that, and we'd worked together a few times, and Free Press was doing a campaign against the AT&T T-Mobile merger, which was eventually went by the wayside thanks to a lot of work by a lot of great organizations. But part of it, I said... you guys doing this campaign, you guys should do parody videos of those T-Mobile ads, because that would be a fun thing, and you could send those out and people would sign up for the list and take action or whatever. And I was like, oh, you know, we could probably make those for super cheap here in Los Angeles. And so we made four of them, and Free Press used them in their campaign, and a lot of people saw them, and I was very thankful for that. And so this was sort of my first foray into writing and producing video stuff for activism. So I'll show one of those.
And I'm AT&T. We've decided to come... Hi, I'm T-Mobile.
And I'm AT&T.
We've decided to come together and join forces. You know, a merger.
And I'm a T-Mobile customer.
Now that T-Mobile and AT&T are BFFs, we can basically do whatever we want.
Yeah. We can raise your prices whenever we want.
You know I have options other than you, right?
Actually, you don't. It's just us and our friend Verizon. We're 80% of the market.
What?
Welcome to the new AT&T T-Mobile.
It's less choice without saving you any money.
I'm right here. Why would you say such a thing?
That was Andy DeYoung who worked on that. We did four of these. They put them out, and they, like I said, seemed to do pretty well. And you know, I think using comedy to promote activism and to promote your cause is like a fun, great way to do it, and it's sort of cuts into just throwing facts and figures out there at people, which, you know, people who are engaged and who want to be absorbing that will absorb that. But then there are a lot of people who, you know, you just want to be able to catch a glance at your issue, and then hopefully they will dig in a little bit more. And so that was kind of what I was hoping for. And then the next thing I did was actually just on a whim, was this parody of Elizabeth Warren, which was like a loving parody because I'm a fan. I'm glad you approve. Because I'm a fan of Elizabeth Warren. So I did two of these videos. And the second one actually, and I'll show the first one I did. But the second one actually is, it's Elizabeth Warren talking straight to camera. Blah, 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 jokes. And at the end, she says, hey, Scott Brown, who will be her opponent in November, let's make an agreement that we will focus on campaign finance reform and we will, you know, put the super PACs aside. Because I thought, like, oh, you know, maybe, because the first one got some attention, like, oh, if the next one, you know, if people see it, maybe something will happen. And then, lo and behold, 2 months later, they actually made an agreement to not run Super PAC ads against each other. Now, I'm not saying that was
me. So that was all you.
No, I'm not saying that was me. But I'm just saying culture of influence is all I'm saying. So that was neat. And again, it's like, I mean, I'm sure they must have seen it. I don't think that they would come out and credit me, though they should have. Do we have that video?
We do.
Okay, wonderful.
We have a chance to help rebuild.
Except
America's
it looks like
middle.
That. Hold no, on. That's how I shot it.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm kidding.
No. Oh, there. Oh, okay. There we go.
We have a chance to help rebuild America's middle class. I'm Elizabeth Warren, and I am running for United States Senate to fuck some shit up. We need to concentrate on education, construction, and renewable energy, but we also need a focus on retribution. That's why I would push for legislation that gives every American a revenge voucher. And once you have this voucher, you would be allowed to kick anyone from Wall Street right in the balls. You know, I grew up on the ragged edge of the middle class, and I know it's hard out there. Hell, I joined a gang when I was only 11. I've broken a man's arm just to see what it looked like. But you know what I did after that? I broke my own arm. It's called empathy. You built a factory out there. Good for you. But you don't have to be such a dick about it. You should pay your fair share. We're all very excited that you made a killing selling those little USB thumb drives shaped like tiny hamburgers. But let me be clear. You moved your USB hamburgers to market on roads that the rest of us paid for. You hired USB hamburger-making workers that the rest of us paid to educate. Your precious little hamburgers were safe at night, tucked in their little buns, because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us pay for. Okay, so in a sense, we all helped to make your tiny hamburgers. Damn it, would someone make me a hamburger? I want to apologize to Senator Scott Brown, and I promise to replace the pair of pants he shit when he found out he might have to run against me. Seriously, I do want to congratulate Senator Brown for starting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Oh, wait. That was me. I'm Elizabeth Warren, and I will fix this sh- myself if I have to.
Oh, I love her so much.
She is pretty.
I wish she was a lesbian and I was a lesbian and she was single and
oh,
I could
God.
Take her to dinner.
Okay. So that was fun. And again, like, I just made that because I liked Elizabeth Warren and I thought people would like an Elizabeth Warren parody. And so, you know, I think it's fun to be able to, like, again, get her message out, because those were all pretty much things that she had said in one way or another, just sort of like repackaged in a fun way. But let's see, do we have time for another one? If we don't, that's fine.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Okay, and so the last one I did, this one is actually not as much activism.
Hi.
Not as much activism behind it, but I wrote this for moveon.org, and so they made it, and I liked it, and so what else are we here to do but watch the videos that we made? So let's fucking do it.
Hi, I'm Mitt Romney. Bain Capital, my company, is a private equity firm. And the way it works here at Bain is that we buy up struggling companies and we streamline them. We make them better, smarter, more efficient. Mostly by firing people.
Well, hey there, friend. Tom,
how you doing?
Great.
Listen, I just want to congratulate you on all the terrific work you've been doing for us here.
Well, thanks, Mr. Romney. You know, I've really been trying this quarter.
That's great. You're fired. The roof is Tom's fired. Anyone can fire someone, but I try and vary it up. Never do the same thing twice.
Well, looks like it's somebody's birthday, so I got you some baked goods. Adorned with a nice message.
Oh my goodness, you remembered.
Of course I did. Wow, Vivian told me in accounting.
Clear your desk out by 5 o'clock.
PM.
This here is a photo of me firing my very first employee. And here is a photo of me signing my very first memo about a mass layoff. And this is a photo of a cat that I dare you not to be inspired by. I dare you. I've been accused of not having a heart. And that hurts, my friends. It really does. But to be fair, it was from a guy that I had laid off right before he had double bypass surgery. So really, the accusation should have probably gone the other way around.
Well, hey there, friend. Would you be a doll and make me a cup of coffee?
I'm the vice president of operations.
Not anymore, you're not.
By firing people, I'm simply giving them more free time to do the things they want to do. Things like building model airplanes, having Segway races on their estates, or buying fancy hats.
Whoa. Lo siento, pero estamos dejando ir.
You know, I don't speak Spanish.
Now, I love that kind of gumption from an immigrant. Well done.
I'm from Des Moines.
Ah, Des Moines. Well, you're still fired.
I have nothing to hide. So, you know, if you want to see my tax returns, I'm happy to show them to you. I just feel at this point it's diverting from the real issues. But I have nothing to hide. So here we go. Once and for all, let's put this to rest. And let me just find them for you. And I'll show them right on camera.
So, yeah, that was Justin Long doing a Mitt Romney with a lot of makeup. And, yeah, I mean, I think, like, his record at Bain Capital is, like, a worthwhile topic of discussion, so I was happy to pitch in to make some jokes about it. But, yeah, I mean, and I'm still relatively new to this world of activism and using comedy as a tool, but I definitely... I definitely see, especially with The Daily Show and Colbert and like how incredibly influential they are, that I think there's a lot more of this that can be done and a lot more of it that I want to do.
And we really would, we wouldn't be able to do a lot of the stuff if it weren't for the internet and the ability that we have to just kind of push things out in a timely way. When I stopped working at Current, I called my friends at Funny or Die and I said, hey, can I start doing Michelle Bachmann for you guys? And they were like, sure. And it was great because every week I would see what dumb thing she did and then I'd make fun of it with my my writing partner, Brian, played Marcus, the gayest Marcus Bachmann, gayer than real Marcus Bachmann. It felt really empowering to have the ability to do that. And of course, you know, being in LA, it's a little easier because of the access we have to, in New York, the access we have to stuff. But, you know, anybody who wants to have a podcast or put something up on YouTube has the power to do this, you know, similar stuff that we're doing.
So I want to, when we were planning for this panel, we had a lot of different conversations, obviously not about technology and how to make it work, but about how you can actually use humor for advocacy and sort of breaking that process down. And it was actually a really interesting discussion, and Eddie, you touched on it a little bit, but maybe we can talk about it a little bit more, this idea of, you know, I think when advocates and people that are activists and are working on reform issues, we know that we're right, right? Like, like the facts are all on our side. We know that, like, how could anybody possibly disagree with this? Because we have 50 pages of proof about how we're right and they're wrong. The problem is when you present that to people, it's kind of overwhelming. And we were talking about this, and a lot of times when people are trying to use humor, they lead with all of the facts and the figures instead of starting from a different place. So I don't know. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I mean, I think when people, and I've seen a lot of, you know, humor videos of people, organizations, what have you, try and put together some sort of like funny video, and they want to put in every fact they have, and then create the comedy from there. And I really think, not that I'm some, you know, genius or anything.
Not true.
Thank you. That was a setup we had.
Yeah. I'll say it later and he'll do the same thing.
But I think, you know, it has to be funny first. And then you, like, what do you have in your arsenal that you want to talk about, whether it's how the AT&T T-Mobile merger is going to cut jobs or how Mitt Romney has a interesting record at Bain Capital. How do you take those little facts and then how do you put it in something that's funny rather than just saying like, oh, we need to do a video where we put in every statistic we have about the AT&T T-Mobile merger. And then people will see it and people know instinctively when a group or person is trying too hard to be funny. And not that I've never been guilty of that. I certainly have a lot, but hopefully.
Not true.
Thank you. This system is working out well. But, you know, and I'm sure all of you know it. Like, if if something's not funny in the first 30 seconds, you're probably not going to watch the whole thing because it's painful to watch. So I do my best to avoid that.
There's a guy asleep in the audience.
that's
no big
my
deal,
dad.
But he's right there. That's your dad. Yeah. That's really rude of your dad. Can we talk about your upbringing? The other thing is, like, if you want to get into like humor-based activism, you touched on it too. Like, part of being a comedian is understanding that you will fail a lot, and that you don't have, like, you don't want to put. I'm going to use the word money shot. You don't want to put everything into one video. Just play around and fail. Fail a bunch so you can figure out what your format is and what the thing you're, you know, maybe the thing that you're good at is, you know, talking to people who already know stuff, like the Elizabeth Warren thing. Like, part of why that's hilarious is because that's how she talks. And you have to know that about her to understand the joke. But just failing is just a really important lesson to learn in anything, comedy, whatever endeavor. And it's on the internet forever, so nobody cares. It's just out there forever.
Well, I think you both have very effectively used comedy as like an entry point for people. It's like a way to get them in the door, and then once they're in the door, you can move them to actually making some change. And we talked a lot about this too. Like, you know, you tap into the thing that's funny and the thing that's immediately an outrage and very obvious. I think, Aaron, you've done this a lot with your videos. Like, you look for the most you watch media critically, which is like the first step, and then you're looking for the thing that's going to make people react, you know, and then you can lead them from that point, but you can use that sort of as an entry point. And I, you know, the stuff that this is great. So my mother, I come off on a tangent, but I promise that's the point. My mother last night, we were watching something, and I said, "Do you know who Rick Santorum is?" And she goes, "No." And I'm like, okay. She doesn't really watch the news and doesn't really know what's going on in the world. And I was like, "Have you ever seen The Daily Show or The Colbert Report?" And she's like, "No." So I sat her down and made her watch it. And not only did she find it hysterical, but she was just like so engaged with what was happening in the world as a result of watching it. And I think this is, not that my mom is like an archetype for everyone in the world, but I think that this is...
She sounds like a lot of moms.
I think it's a great example of like, you know, I've tried to engage her on political issues before and talk to her about them, and she just hasn't... It just hasn't appealed to her in that way. And by using humor as like the entry point, it completely changed things. She's like, "I want to watch this every day. I feel like I'll know what's going on." Like,
it's fun. They make it fun to know about that stuff.
Right.
And look, I think we've all been in a situation. I've definitely gone through periods where I was like, "I'm not going to watch the news." It's super overwhelming. But once you get to a point where you say to yourself, "They're not the authority. I don't have to listen to all these different viewpoints. I have a voice and a way of thinking that's independent of these authority figures." It's a lot. It's very freeing. My therapist told me that.
We have about 15 minutes left, and I know we wanted to do a Q&A. So does anybody have any questions? Oh, good. Okay. There's a microphone that will come to you, and then...
We're podcasting, so no pressure. But you do have to...
Make it funny.
Yeah. Two people asleep in the audience.
Hey, guys. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Colbert Report and The Daily Show, and I wonder...
We can't get you a job there.
No.
Okay.
But I do wonder, though, using satire as a mechanism to convey the message, does it end up having this deniability veil? Like, it's like an easy out of, "I'm not taking myself seriously. I know it's not..." If it doesn't, comparing it to traditional media, you know, if these guys are very credible or try to be credible, I'm just a comedian. And does that kind of hurt
your credibility?
Are you talking
like specifically like how Jon Stewart's kind of shirked his, or not shirk, but like he denies what a political influence he is and that he's not a political figure?
Maybe a little bit, but yeah. More on the people that are watching this, that you're trying to engage. It's in some ways questions their... your sincerity.
You know, I think that the people, like, we all love them, and I never question their sincerity. I think they're deadly serious about the stuff that they're, there isn't, because of the way that they do it and the passion they do it with, I never question their sincerity. And I think it's almost like, it's like getting kids to eat vegetables. That's what that show is, with people who aren't involved in politics. So, you know, I think that is a criticism you could make, but I think it's above that. Who cares? Because they're doing a great job. Well, it's scary that they're kind of replacing, you know, the Tom Brokaws of the world.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, from where we're coming from, like, we have seen these policies get passed in Washington, which, you know, allow media organizations to, you know, consolidate and get too big, and then what they do to cut costs is fire journalists and just replace them with Twitter feeds because that's way cheaper. And then, you know, the news media has essentially just become this, like, let's have somebody stand on the air and they'll read to us how John 24 feels about, you know, Mitt Romney.
iPad, yeah.
Right, and that's not journalism. We actually do need people that, like, go out into the world and find out this information. You know, and I think there is this correlation between the policy decisions that happen in Washington and how they impact the news media. But,
Look at the ultrasound bill. I mean, that was... They're still doing an ultrasound if you want to get an abortion, but at least it's not...
in your vagina. So that was a nice, and thank you, comedy, Tina, or not, Rachel, God, I just turned into my grandmother. I'm going through every woman's name in comedy. You know, the Colbert Report and Daily Show and Amy Poehler. Thank you. That's who I was thinking of. You know, that was impactful that they did that. And now women won't have electrical wands in their hoo-has. Okay, we got more
questions.
Do you want to talk more about abortion?
So my question is, there's Daily Show and Colbert, we all know and love, and, you know, I don't think anybody's surprised it's a little left-leaning, but why do you think that right-wing or conservatives haven't found a version of that?
It's funny.
It's called Red Hour. Is that the show?
Intentionally funny.
Yeah, they've tried, and I hate to say they and lump, you know, a whole group of people together, but there have been attempts at right-wing you know, comedy news shows, but I think there's something about, you know, I hate to group one side, but, you know, perhaps something about the left that's always like attacking the people in power. And that's like, you know, inherently more satisfying than the other way around, or like hippie punching or whatever, which, I mean, I think there is an audience for that, but in general,
the hippie punching.
Yeah, I mean, there is. I mean, there's plenty of people who laugh at that. But in general, I think, like, there's more fodder for comedy when you're coming from a place of, like, look how terrible the little guy is getting screwed. And I also think there's a lot more comedian. Like, if you're a comedian, you're probably left-leaning other than, you know, Dennis Miller.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's... We're kind of like preaching to the choir here, but there's definitely there's another convention somewhere where people are talking about conservative comedy and how great it is. So, you know, I think it does exist. It's just not in our orbit, and it's definitely not as popular. I think
is that what North by Northwest is?
Yeah, North by Northwest. It's
watch out,
red. Yeah.
Question? Yes. Hi.
So we saw a bunch of examples of funny satire and parodies of bad things. And do you guys see a way to use humor to be proactive about policies and about, for example, ways to fix the media system rather than saying, look at this, you know, we're going to be really funny about how fucked up all of this is, but can we be really funny about how we can make something better?
I am always very wary about calls to action because I don't want that to be my decision, and I don't want to be in that position to say, like, hey, well, then call your senator or whatever. I don't know if that's my job.
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm on a different
you're
boat.
Different, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there is. I think there absolutely is. And, you know, again, it's just like finding, you know, whatever you want to be this positive things. Let's say that you want to reclassify, you know, internet as a communication service. Sorry that I just, I know. But like, let's say you have this like wonky policy thing. Like there is a way, there's always a way to like break that down, like find out what the details of it are. And you know, there's a funny angle there. And then of course at the end, like, you know, you can talk about the wonky stuff or link to it. But I think there's always a way to take a minute detail, whether you're making fun of how terrible something is or you want to talk about how something great, how great something could be.
Yeah, and I don't know if I totally agree with your self-assessment, Aaron, because while you may not say directly, like, call your senator,
yeah,
when you watch something like the Planned Parenthood video you did last year, which I pulled up recently and I was like, I can't believe we're still fighting about this a year later.
I know.
But, you know, you don't have to say that because you've illustrated and brought out the outrageous parts of it so much that the conclusion of someone watching it, if they sympathize with you or empathize with you, is to take it. You know what I mean? So I think there is more that comedians can do to make those connections, you know, and it doesn't have to be a lot. Like the end of the AT&T T-Mobile video, for example, was just like, okay, you've watched this funny video, and then like at the end there's just a link that you can click that will take you somewhere and sort of bring you into that next level. But yeah, I don't know. I disagree with you.
Thank you.
You're an activist.
And a genius.
Well, there we go. Full circle. We have like 5 more minutes, 6 more minutes.
Yeah, there are 5 other questions.
Okay, not 6. He wanted me to know that I was 1 minute off.
Hi, Erica. A quick question: do you ever have to censor yourself? Are there certain things that are off limits? How do you go about in your mind deciding what the angle is? You know, are there any lines that you draw? Curious about that.
Oh, censoring yourself. I don't like to talk about rape. That's the one thing I try not to make jokes about.
She's about to make a rape joke.
Yeah. I don't know. It's a weird thing because, like, I want to talk about, it's all connected with women's issues. I talk about everything. I don't try not to lay off anything. Even if it's dark, it's important. Yeah.
It's funny. I actually feel like I definitely make I'm very intentional to not be offensive in certain ways because I don't know, maybe, I'm still sort of learning all this, but, you know, trying to fight for something that's a good cause and using a video, if you're offensive in the wrong way, I feel like you can blow everything because if they're like, oh, they're making this merger, these videos against the merger, but they're also misogynistic, then people aren't even talking about your issue. They're talking about how misogynistic your video is, and then you've sort of wasted a lot of energy. And that actually happened, that someone had done an ad against the AT&T T-Mobile merger, and then it got slammed for being anti-LGBT. And so it was unfortunate that they did that. So I do try and watch out for that.
It's important to take those risks, though, because, you know, if we don't take risks, we don't... I feel like I talk like George Bush. If we don't take risks, then we gain nothing. I'm willing to fail in order to try and do something that maybe, you know, someone's not talking about or doing.
Yeah, I agree. It's important to definitely push in certain ways, but I'm also very conscious of not being a jerk.
I think we have time for one more question.
Yay, I win. I also want to mention
about... where are you?
Right here. Sorry. Do you want me to...
Oh, yes.
I'm short.
Hi.
Oh, hi. So first off, you said ladies not putting wands in their vaginas, and I just think you maybe might turn in the next Giselle as people are like, oh, my God, it's South by Southwest. She was all against wands and vaginas, and people seem to do that pretty frequently.
Have you had a wand in your vagina? It's off-putting.
It's a tish off-putting, but you never know. You never know. I'm talking, I mean, you know, if it vibrates, it's okay. Anyways, you're welcome.
Speaking. How are we finally just getting to the good stuff?
Give it to the audience. Let's crowdsource this shit. So how do you fight against the idea of, wait for it, buzzword, slacktivism? And this idea of that by watching this video that makes me fighting against the man or doing whatever, and this idea of it doesn't actually make you do anything other than tell people I watch Jon Stewart instead of Fox News.
Yeah, I can start. I think if you... I'll use another buzzword, ladder of engagement, right? So if you give people humor as an entry point, it's all about like leading them to the next step. So if you're trying to create social change, it might not just be enough to be funny. You will raise awareness, you know, like in the same way. I mean, we can talk about the Coney thing, like we can put up a bunch of posters, but that's not necessarily going to stop this guy. But it's an important step. Raising awareness is an important step. So I think, you know, the more, if you're really trying to push for social change, the more that you can partner with people that do have a plan and a plan that you can get behind, like the stronger that will be, like the, you know, I mean, Eddie, you take full credit, right, for stopping the AT&T T-Mobile merger because
that
of your videos.
Me.
Yeah.
That was me.
So
I did.
You know, it's you know, no, but we, but, you know, we partner, and I think like we're more effective when we're working together.
For the podcast I do, I did do this one thing. So Trent Franks is an Arizona representative senator. Anyway, he did. I forget what the thing is that he did, but basically I had people on the website or on the podcast. I said, go to his website. Oh, should sex selection or race selection abortion be illegal in the U.S.? He's trying to get this bill passed where basically it's a slippery slope to
banning abortion. So basically he has this thing, and it's like there's three radio buttons: yes, no, not sure, and email. So I basically had people go on his website, and I said, all you need to write is check yourself before you wreck yourself. So that's nothing, right? That's absolutely nothing, but it's, you can't really write in this thing. And people did it. They did it. And I don't, did it do anything? I don't know. He just got a bunch of emails quoting a 90s rap song. But to me, I felt like, well, I did, you know, I did do a call to action in a way that I felt was like cooler than just people going on and going, I disagree with what you're doing. I wanted to fuck up his, the fact that he even had it on his website. I wanted to fuck up the technology behind him getting his message out. So, you know, that's people still sitting at their, with their laptop and maybe the bathroom or with, in their pajamas or whatever, but they still did, you know, did something. I don't know what, but.
No, I mean, and, you know, it's interesting because, like, you know, the biggest online protest ever, this, you know, to stop SOPA was, you know, million, you could say, like, those millions of people, what it was like 15 million people at this point, like took some sort of action. And like, yeah, you know, one person signing a petition isn't much, but you know, it is obviously possible that like if you get enough people signing enough petitions and doing enough slacktivism, it becomes activism, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it raises the profile, which gets it attention. And then once you have the attention of the people that can, you know, make the change that you're looking for. I mean, like, it's organizing 101, right? Like, find the person who has the power to make the change and, you know, get to that person.
It's much better than the 80s, right? Can we all agree on that? You have to call people back then.
Faxing your senators, remember that? Okay, well, I want to leave folks with just a couple of things. You know, one of the biggest points that, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit in the panel too, but like, if you want to do these humorous videos and work in comedy into your activism, I think that all of Eddie's points about, you know, like thinking about the thing that's funny and the way to bring them in and not using every stat and fact and figure is going to be effective. Second, this is kind of just like a shout out about an opportunity that is coming up. If anybody in the room is with a nonprofit organization, which I'm sure many of you are, there is a very rare opportunity for us to create the kind of media that we want coming up from the FCC. They're going to be issuing small, low-power community radio licenses probably sometime in the next year, and these are available for nonprofit groups to apply for. So if anybody has questions about that or is interested at all, just come talk to me and I can give you more information. And then I just wanted to give everybody a chance to continue to connect with us so you can find Free Press on the internet, freepress.net. We're at Free Press for Twitter. We're on the Facebook also. And you guys have Twitter.
I'm at Gibblertron. It's my last name if I was a robot.
And I am at Geller Ed. So it's my last name and first name.
Guys, thanks so much for coming out this morning.
Yeah, thank you so much.